Welcome back, everybody, into Bill's Chat. I am Josh McCarty. With me tonight, as always, is Luca. Luca, one down, three to go.
That's the objective here, Josh. And obviously, if you're an individual that listens to the show, I thought it was almost a perfect way to first test me in the waters of, am I going to follow through with my New Year's resolution, my goal going into this time period where I said I wouldn't freak out, I wouldn't overreact, I'd let the game play out early. We have traditionally been that team that starts slow. I gave my reasonings why before. It feels like that's exactly what happened here. It tested my faith. I successfully handled it well. I didn't deter from that. And that faith was rewarded handsomely, Josh, I would say, overall. And it might have been a little bit bumpy, but that might be one of the more dominant playoff games I can ever recall for the Bills, for sure. And even just any team that I actually cared about or respected or anything in general. That was a good old fashioned ass whooping after they got a little bit of a reality check following that opening drive.
It was an outclassing, and yeah. I respect the Broncos. You and I both do. We did an hour long pregame show on Friday. Well, preview show, not pregame. And we both talked about how good that defense was, but we kept saying, but like, we don't know if there's a defense that can shut down the Bills. In fact, we both kind of doubt it. And when you look at what the Bills did today, Luca, I mean, 31-7 over the Denver Broncos. In fact, before we dive too deep in, let's get some stats out of the way here that I thought were pretty important. So Sean McDermott gets his sixth playoff win as Bills head coach. Marv Levy has 11, so McDermott has a ways to go there. Be nice to get three more this year. He'd be well on his way to catching Levy and passing him in other regards. Sean McDermott, Luca, let's see how sharp your brain is right now, has now defeated four Super Bowl winning head coaches in the playoffs. Can you name them?
Not Andy Reid yet.
Unfortunately.
Sorry.
I'll have to go double check, but I think that's correct.
Yeah. Well, obviously Sean Payton, Super Bowl winning head coaches, Mike Tomlin.
Two for two.
I'm trying to leave the one I know for last just because dramatic effect, but I'm trying to think of the other one. All right. I know Harbaugh, which is coming up next. I don't think you're counting. No, he wasn't there yet. I don't know.
I'll give you a small hint.
Yeah.
Probably the best game in Bills history.
Bill Belichick. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Man, it's weird only because there's no Brady there.
Yeah. Your brain doesn't compute
that it's Belichick, but yeah, that's right. Good old rookie year, Mac Jones and Bill Belichick. Good call. But Harbaugh, I was trying to leave for last because of course coming up next.
It's coming up next. And the reality is McDermott's probably going to have to go through two Super Bowl winning head coaches to advance to the Super Bowl beyond Sean Payton if he wants to do that. Unless the Texans can shock the world and beat the Chiefs next week, but we'll get there when it's time to get there. For now, let's talk about this game. 31-7, the Bills win. Luca, when this game ended and the Bills improved to 1-0 in the playoffs, 14-4 on the regular season, what was your overall reaction to this game?
It was even better than I expected. I mean, I just couldn't get enough of everything that took place. So like my initial reaction, it wasn't even a relief. It was just, it made me go back to a more grounded feeling of next week's going to be a true coin flip. And it really, after experiencing last night with the Ravens dominance of the Steelers, both that game and this game had a similar vibe to them where, as you said, to start the show, it was an outclassing. So I think I was already well under processing it from the Mac Hollins hit as a gunner through everything that transpired after it. It was already in the process of, we're going to win this game. From there, it's like, just how big of a gap truly is it between them and us? Pretty significant, as we learned throughout to the end of the game. And from there, it was like, on to the next one, really. That's really where my mindset was overall. It just, you don't get these kind of games often in the playoffs, of course, where you truly are just a level ahead, if not a level plus ahead, your opposition. And it's no disrespect to the Broncos, of course, but overall, it was said a lot in my living room. And essentially what was said is all the discussion going into it was about how Patrick Surtain is that X factor that could really, you know, mess things up for the Bills offense, create some issues, things like that. And in my living room, an individual said it perfectly. It's like, you can talk like that all you want, but for the big four, Mahomes, Allen, Burrow, Lamar, there is no such thing as having a good defense that will, like, those guys are tiers ahead of everyone else. That is how it works. And you can put those four how you want, and it feels like you can't go wrong for the most part. It just, those guys are different. So, you know, Surtain, potentially defensive player of the year this year. All the defense, credit to them. It even looked like they had a good game plan early on that was helping them kind of at least limit things. But at the end of the day, Josh Allen is just so far ahead of everyone else that the class finally shines out. And that is the reason that a quarterback will always win the MVP award, because that is the most important position. It's the most difficult position in all of sports. And ours just so happens to be one of, if not the best at his job. And he can do everything you could possibly ask and some. And the Broncos learned that very, very hard today. This was not going to be the same Josh Allen they even saw a year ago on Monday night. This was a different beast. They got to experience playoff Josh Allen. And I mean, I think I shared even a similar sentiment where Von Miller, Josh, I don't know if you saw the tweet that was put out where he kind of on his it was on his Instagram, where it was just Michael Jordan grinning and with a little bit of a laugh, looking down at his iPad from the Last Dance documentary, and tagged Patrick Surtain in it. And it was in reference to when Surtain said it was our time to shine. And it's like, hey, young buck, this is what it's like having a Josh Allen. We can outclass you. And when the game ended, Josh, that's exactly what I was thinking and feeling about. Although all things said and done, now it's like, look ahead. And guess what? I mentioned top four for a reason, the big four. There's another big four coming to town in Lamar Jackson, where it's like, okay, here we go. This is when the playoffs really get going. And thankfully for us, we were able to get ourselves in a position where we got to enjoy a little bit of what we'll call a softer warm-up playoff game leading into that.
Yeah, I think if you're a Bengals fan and you were uneasy about the fact that your team didn't make the playoffs, you look at what happened to the Steelers, you look at what happened to the Broncos, and if you want to throw the Chargers in there as well, you look at what happened to them, although the Chargers did beat the Bengals head-to-head. You're kind of like, we could have done that, but it is what it is. You don't lose to the Patriots at home, and you don't find yourself in that position. I don't feel bad for the Bengals, but I understand the frustration of their fans, because they would have been, I think, much better fight than the Broncos or the Steelers. This Bills team, man. I came on at halftime. It was 10-7 Bills. Will Lutz had just missed a field goal. And there was some frustration in chat, Luca. And it was like, why are the Bills letting them hang around? And my point was, I don't think the Bills have necessarily done anything wrong. They'd only had three drives. And their drives had basically been a field goal where Josh Allen just missed a wide open Dawson Knox in the end zone. Josh Allen, on a day where he was 20 for 26 and had two touchdowns, actually had some errant throws that we all kind of remember, the one to Knox, the one to Coleman coming across the field. That's how picky we are at this point. Then they had the touchdown drive. Then they had the one where they're driving down, where they start on the 1 yard line, and Deion Dawkins has his weekly false start penalty, followed up by a very quick, Allen on the Broncos just going right by David Edwards and sacking Josh Allen. And I can't remember the last time Josh Allen's been sacked, tanking that drive. And it's like the Bills only had three possessions in the first half. My concern at halftime was, okay, the Bills have established the fact they can run on this team. And that's a great feeling. When you talk about January football, you talk about having to play that style if the weather gets bad. This is a physical defense. We know that. And the Bills impose their will on them. But the downside of that style, Luca, when you are controlling the clock, when you are possessing the ball, is you shorten the game. And the Bills only got three possessions in the first half, where in a regular first half, they could have seven or eight possessions. When you shrink your possession count down in half, now you're a team that's an 8.5-point favorite, but you're inviting way more variance into play when the sample size of drives shrinks down that small. Now you're talking about playoffs, which is already just a one-and-done scenario, and now you're shrinking down the possessions. the difference between these two teams, the less drives there are, has less of an opportunity to show. And that's where when the Broncos convert a fake punt, you're like, uh-oh, that might be all they need. Well, then four plays later, they're really punting. But I think there's a give and a take with this ball control style the Bills wanted to do. Although I do say that, Luca, knowing that this is probably the last opponent on this playoff run where the Bills are going to go into a game as more than a touchdown favorite and where they have to worry about inviting variance into the scenario. I think they can just play their game from here on out.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal point. That really is kind of the difference, right? There's almost a chess match that's of a different level when it comes to this kind of game compared to what they're going to be experiencing moving forward, right? When it comes to Baltimore, and if they were to come out of that one on top, then whatever will lay ahead of them from there. It most likely is, yes, you're going to have to keep foot on the gas. You're going to really have to just absolutely capitalize it every time you touch the ball and not feel like the other side is going to be able to limit you or attempt to limit you and play the long game, right? You know, sit in a little bit, run it a little bit more, run the clock, stuff like that, because they're going to just try to enforce their will upon you. And the first half of this game was kind of, I can understand that uneasiness, right? I tuned in briefly when you had gone live on halftime, and I heard your point on that, and it's valid, right? And I think that's the kind of thing that occurs, Josh, that I think whether you recognize it or not, you know, for anyone out there, that's what's building that nervous anxiety. That's what's building that, whether you recognize it or not, because you'll sit there and even subconsciously sometimes think about, when was the last time we were on the field? Like, this other team's just continuing to do things. Whether they're doing big things or not doesn't matter. It just feels like it's been a long time. And you know, even probably on the sideline a little bit, they're kind of thinking, when are we going to get back out there? When are we going to be able to do things? That sometimes does happen depending on the length of the drive that's happening in front of them. So it was a weird one. But what I love about it was this game to me was a perfect representation of just simply how this entire Bills season has been when they find success, right? Early on, it does feel like sometimes, or a lot of times, the opposition has a little bit of an edge because they're able to properly game plan something that they want to start a game strong with. Then from there, it feels like they're just doing the classic, hey, let's get things out of Josh Allen's hand. As long as the ball's not in Josh Allen's hands, we'll be okay, or we at least have a fighting chance. From there, you go into halftime. It's been a little uneasy, but most likely the Bills are still up top, but you're not sure about things. You come out the second half, and guess what happens, Josh? They absolutely dominate from there moving forward. They understand how to adjust to the game. They understand how to feel it. And next thing you know, you're outscoring your opposition 21-0 in the second half. Now, I'm not exactly expecting a shutout of the Ravens come next week, but what I mean by that is, simply put, it feels like that is probably the similar flow we are going to most likely expect when it comes to the Ravens next week. So the hope and reality is, as you said, one, on one hand, they're going to want to just do more of their thing and not just be worried about playing that chess game of, you know, does it feel like we're limited in our possessions? Do we need to almost force the issue? Luckily, this Bills team doesn't ever seem to do that, of course. That's why they limit the turnovers. But ultimately, get into halftime in a competitive game. And from there, that's where we trust ourselves. That's where we can capitalize and ultimately come out on top, because we trust our abilities to adjust to whatever you've presented us. And from there, we'll be able to adjust even further in order to come out on top more than not. So it was just a beautiful 60 minutes of depicting exactly what this team's been about. And I really appreciated that as we now go into the big boy games.
Well, to put that into context, let's talk about the Bills defense and the adjustments they made. You talked about the first drive. The Broncos go down in four plays, and Troy Franklin is in the end zone five plays. Excuse me. Deep bomb from Bo Nix. If you had Troy Franklin on your first touchdown score, you probably cashed in big time, because he has not been playing a lot of snaps for the Broncos with the emergence of Marvin Mims Jr. After that first drive, this is what the Bills defense did. The rest of the game, they gave up 0 points, one third down conversion. The Broncos went 1 for 8, 82 yards passing to a team that lost by 24 points, 25 yards rushing from running backs. Just a tremendous day from a Bills defense, Luka, that I think had fans very nervous. And there is a part of me, and we've talked about this a little bit. I don't think you agree with this point, but there's a part of me that does think maybe there's a little bit of recency bias with how we're looking at this Bills defense. And I look at this 3 out of 4 game stretch that I think really has people nervous. Obviously, the 2-game road trip where they went to Detroit and went to LA, and it's like they couldn't stop a nosebleed. Although I will say, I think Detroit, the defense played pretty well. That's a damn good Lions team. And it really felt like the Lions were down 35-14, and the defense started letting off the gas a little bit. And then I'll say the third game was the 24-21 victory over the Patriots at home, where it was like, okay, should the Patriots be putting up 21 points on us? You know, a little bit of uneasiness there. But when you look at this defense in totality, I think on the whole season, I think they're league average-ish. And Rasul Douglas was not healthy for those 2 road trip games. He was back out there today. Christian Benford was out there today. Rapp was out there today. Taron Johnson, thank God, came back after the injury. Yeah. Matt Milano, I think, in the last few weeks has really started looking more like Matt Milano. Yep. And I don't know that this defense is ever going to be top of the league defense. And I don't think, Luka, at this point in the playoffs, it really matters because you're starting to get into the quarterbacks where they are just kind of immune to those type of defenses. I think this defense, though, is plenty good enough to win a Super Bowl with. And we're going to find out in about 6 or 7 days, depending on the NFL schedule makers, if that's true, because they play as good of a team offensively as they're going to see on this entire playoff run. But overall, I don't think I was as down on the Bills defense as a lot of fans were coming into these playoffs. But I come out of today feeling like this team doesn't need the Ravens to throw up all over themselves offensively to stop the Ravens. I think this team is going to have some tricks up their sleeve and is going to find a way to get off the field more than a handful of times against this very explosive Ravens team. I don't want to turn this into a Ravens pregame show, so let's just focus on the Bills defense confidence level and that conversation.
It's a great point, though, right? And I think it's the classic thing that we love to say, you have to peek under the hood, right? When you peek under the hood, it feels like the Bills defense has been a little bit better than maybe what we've been giving them credit for. And overall today, the effort for 60 minutes was phenomenal. Even I loved the question after the game that was presented to Rasul Douglas, and Rasul Douglas simply answered it the best way possible. There's still 58 more minutes, right? Or 56, whatever it was. It in 4 minutes that they scored that, whatever it was. Hey, there's still plenty of game left, was the message, right? They didn't get shook. You know, it wasn't like, oh wow, what the heck is going on? And they just lost their heads. They understand the big picture. They definitely know what's on the other side of the ball for them. And it's an opening touchdown isn't the end all be all for you, because luckily in your corner is 17. And if you have 17, you feel pretty good about yourself going into the second half, no matter how the first half went, because 17 is possible of making anything happen. So I said that in a really weird way. Anyways, I digress. So what I loved about this defense today, though, is, as you put it, the healthiest it's been in a while, it started to show its stripes a little bit in a better way. And it started to show that what we saw even in that Ravens game that everyone loves to allude back to, where we had lost 35-10 or whatever it was, this is a different unit than what that team was. Now, the Ravens are a different unit offensively than what we remember them as, but that's just what happens throughout the season, right? And kind of what you're going into is, we've been seeing, even in these high-scoring affairs, really the only game that stands out to me is the Rams game, where it's just like things just weren't working. But that's also sometimes what happens when you just go up against other great offensive units, when you go up against great teams. And to your point as well, you're now at that point where a great defense can even be neutralized in that effect, right? We've had top 10 defenses in the past under Sean McDermott, and then somehow you go into Arrowhead and it gets shredded up. You go up against those elite offenses and it really doesn't matter anymore. And I'm kind of with you on that. The defense feels good enough where it can be opportunistic when it needs to be. It does the thing that it's always done, even when they were top 10 defenses, bend but do not break. And they just dare you to try to take chances, because they believe, and it shows all the time, they believe that they're going to have a better chance to get a turnover or anything like that than you be able to pop them over the top or whatever it might be and get six. And that happened once today, and it was clearly just from great game planning by a great offensive mind in Sean Payton, and overall they executed to perfection. From there, as you pointed out with stats, they found it very, very difficult to do everything. And that is the sign of a defense that is calm, composed, and understands the assignment, is okay with everything, and from there just gets the job done. And they dared them to once again try to do it and didn't give them an inch in the way of doing that. So this defense feels like one that is absolutely capable of making a handful of plays against anyone that would be just enough to then hand that ball back to this offense. And this offense feels like one that is capable of putting up points at every point, at any point in time, that as a team, as an entire unit, which is exactly what this team is, they are all one unit. Collectively, they are capable of, you know, going to the top, doing everything that they need to. And they were all class and business today, where they just made sure that even being 8.5-point favorites against a team in the playoffs that was coming in with, you know, they were definitely very confident in their abilities and felt that they had a legitimate chance in this game. They made sure they understood when the game was over, hey, we respect what you are. You're a playoff team, but you just came into the house of a very, very different level of playoff team, and you got smacked around because of it.
Yeah, it reminds you of, now I'm not comparing the Bills to the Patriots, but like during the Patriots dynasty, it felt like the Patriots and the Colts were the class of the AFC, and you'd have teams like the Jaguars or the Broncos even, you know, make the playoffs, like, oh, those are good teams, and they'd go play the Patriots or the Colts and just get smoked. Yeah. And that's what happened today, and the Bills go up in weight class next week, and we all can't wait for that game. Let's talk about the offense. Luca, we have had many a James Cook conversations. I do think the offensive line deserves a tremendous amount of credit today.
Oh, yeah.
Your key to the game was actually the offensive line, specifically Deion Dawkins and Spencer Brown against Cooper and Benito, and they held up very, very well, particularly in the pass game, but also in the run game, where James Cook averages 5.2 yards per carry. But this isn't just an offensive line stat line. The improvement of James Cook this year to be patient, to set up his blocks, to break arm tackles. I always felt like in his first 2 years in the league, James Cook had this speed, but he left so much meat on the bone with his runs, whether he'd take a bad angle or he'd get like a small little arm tackle and go down on first contact. He looks so much more like his brother Dalvin Cook right now, like in his prime. It is scary. And he has a speed burst button that his brother Dalvin Cook didn't even top out at. And Dalvin Cook was dynamic as all get out. He is such a weapon for this team. My key to the game, ironically, was throwing passes to James Cook. And he didn't catch a single pass, although I think the play of the game was a pass to a running back. So maybe I'll call a little bit of a victory on that, Ty Johnson's touchdown pass. But James Cook, Luca, I think we talked about it before, but they have to make a decision on his contract here in the next year. He is slowly but surely, or maybe fastly, stepping his way into that conversation, that elite group of running backs where you do consider paying them a second contract. And that's a big thing for me to say, because I used to be on the standpoint of, I don't care who your running back is, you don't pay him. And boy, Saquon Barkley and Derrick Henry made a lot of people look foolish this year. And now I'm looking at James Cook and I'm like, I don't know if I want to look at this offense without him. What do you think about James Cook's day?
I think you can have both, right? And I'm not saying I'm mega anti pay James Cook, and it's nothing about the player himself. I think James Cook, I agree with all your points. It feels like he's growing. It feels like he understands exactly what he needs to do, both behind the line of scrimmage and then what he needs to do as soon as that hole becomes available. And those are two very different worlds that he clearly didn't understand when he first came into the league. And that's where you're coming from with the meat on the bone comment, of course. And he's doing great. And I think he's an extremely valuable weapon. There's a simple reason as why week 18, I saw him get that carry for a touchdown. And I immediately, my reaction wasn't happy for James Cook getting a touchdown. It was, why the hell is he still on the field in a week 18 game? That doesn't matter. And that's because I obviously understood how important James Cook is to this team. He's not exactly replaceable. It's, you know, Ray Davis, hopefully he's okay. Or Ty Johnson isn't exactly going to be able to replicate what James Cook brings to the table. That is as clear as day. But what I will say is it does feel like a situation overall where he is something special, but ultimately if you find yourself, you know, strained on the cap and you're projecting down the line, you're not going to find another James Cook, but I feel like you can replace the production you get out of a James Cook. That it's one where I don't necessarily put him at the level of a Saquon Barkley, who truly is just a single man roster changing unit. And Derrick Henry, look, it's not like he's got a 4.240, but he changes a team just because he's a linebacker. He is a linebacker running at you. And if you, as the classic saying goes, do not let him get through that line, because as soon as he does and he gets to the second level, he is bigger than everyone there and he can still run as fast as you. So therefore, this becomes extremely difficult and he only gets faster as he keeps rolling, because big things that pick up speed continue to do so at more than a smaller item. I put him just under those, but at the same time, I think we're getting to that point, Josh, and this is where I think you're getting at. If we find ourselves next year talking about either in the lead up to the season, talking about James Cook getting an extension, or during the season, or even after next season, as he continues to do what he's doing right now that we're seeing, I'm not going to exactly complain about it unless the number is too egregious to like stomach and accept. Right. I think that's the way to best put it. So I do put him in that category where he is valuable. I don't necessarily, it's the benefit of having Josh Allen, I guess is the way to really put it. You put someone that's pretty dang athletic next to Josh Allen, and I bet you're going to get the best version of them. That is realistically what's happening. That's what happens across the entire roster, because Josh Allen's just that good at elevating. But James Cook still does a lot of work on his own that deserves a lot of respect. It feels like he doesn't get nearly as much as respect as he should nationally, but at least he gets a lot here. And overall, I'm not going to be upset if the Bills were to eventually pay him. But again, it's not something that I believe in, just because, simply put, it feels like in an Allen offense, you can replace that production in a multitude of ways and change how you want to do things and ultimately still find success otherwise. But I don't want to take anything away from James Cook, because we're talking about, should you pay running backs overall? He had an incredible, was this the best game we've seen of James Cook? Just understanding in the moment that it needed to be done against a pretty dang good defense and defensive line, although they're not exactly known for their run defending and run stuffing, it's still a very formidable front five, we'll call it. And ultimately there was never a moment. Well, actually scratch that. There was one run where I found myself saying, this isn't college, bud. Don't do that. But overall, he felt like a big boy, understanding the assignment, getting positive yards time and time again, and got it done. You don't get 23 carries for 120 yards and a touchdown just by simply standing next to Josh Allen. You still got to put in the work, and he absolutely did that. This feels like one of the better, if not the best, complete game we've seen from James Cook, with the magnitude of when he needed to do it as well, because he showed up when he absolutely needed to.
Yeah, I mean, there's been better statistical outputs for sure, but to your point, like playoff game against maybe the best defense in the league, or regular season game against the Mozzie Smith-led Dallas Cowboys run defense. And the other thing I love about his game, and this is going to sound kind of counterintuitive, but there wasn't that 50-yard touchdown run that skews the numbers where you're like, okay, he had 120 yards on 23 carries, but you take away the 50-yarder, you know, there was no massively explosive run. It was consistently 5, 6, 5, 6, 7, 7, 7. So I'm with you. I think given the stakes, given what the Bills needed to do today to really attack this team and loosen up this defense and the pass rush, this was a massive performance by James Cook. Potentially, Luca, we'll be mentioning him in a later segment. Stay tuned. You mentioned Josh Allen doesn't get enough credit for how he elevates people. We have some breaking news in the Bills chat. We need some breaking news dings or something, but well, this part of it isn't breaking news. A big story this week was Josh Allen and Deion Dawkins were the only players on the Bills roster to get all pro consideration. Deion Dawkins was all pro too, right? Like he was second team all pro, no first team all pros. And Dawkins,
I don't remember if he actually made all pro. He should have, but I can't recall at this exact moment in time. I feel, oh, man,
maybe it wasn't. Either way, the Bills were snubbed in All-Pro and Pro Bowl voting, and it seems like Josh Allen's going to lose it on the MVP. Breaking news into the Bills chat news desk, and by that I mean I just saw it on Twitter, and shout out to the Twitter detectives. Luca, did you notice Joshua Patrick Allen showed up to the stadium today in a sweatshirt that donned the letters FEA?
No, I did not actually notice that.
Are you young and hip enough? Because up until 30 seconds ago, I certainly wasn't, to know what that means.
I like how you phrase that. I will also just say, I'm not exactly sure where we're going here with FEA.
Okay, so parents, if you have kids in the car, I'm going to use a bad word here. So prepare yourself. Turn the volume down for the next 10 seconds and then turn it right back up. Thank you very much. FEA, Lucas, stands for fuck them all.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And no, I love sense. Our quarterback.
I was going to say fuck everyone always.
Yeah.
But it's same concept.
Yeah.
Okay. I love it.
I mean, that's, I just, Ryan, no, shout out to Ryan Tal, but I think he's the one that kind of picked up on it from the Shout podcast. But.
So Dawkins was not, I was trying to think because I was like, I'm pretty sure Lane Johnson and Maialata respectively were both second all team left and right tackles, which they are using single-handedly as motivation because in the conference you have Tristan Wirfs, who is the left tackle, first team All-Pro, and Penei Sewell as the right team, first team All-Pro, right tackle, first team All-Pro. So they even have their own thing going on. But yeah, I mean, look, there's some good tackles out there. So it's no disrespect. Deion Dawkins was a phenomenal player where we had to even contemplate it this season because he had a great season. But yeah, it's unfortunately he did not make that cut.
The Bills noticed, and they have a chip on their shoulder about it. And you know they're going to go against a team next week that got quite a few All Pros. They went against a team today that had five all pros. So, you know, things went pretty, pretty well. I want to compliment Sean McDermott real quick, Luca, before we get to game balls and game checks. I thought he had a really sharp day. And I think as Bills fans, we tend to focus on the negative too much with him. You know, obviously, when you lose a game, it's very easy to point out what the head coach did wrong. Some of these games they've lost to Kansas City. You know, the field goals that he took in the AFC Championship game where it was clear very early they needed touchdowns to win. The way he handled 13 seconds, the way the team kind of melted down in Houston in Josh Allen's first playoff game. But there were several examples today of McDermott to me being really sharp and his team being buttoned up. One, I thought his fourth down aggression was really on point. I thought he was aggressive at times that it made sense to be aggressive. I thought he took field goals at times when the fans were booing, but I was like, this team is not going to run away and hide from you on the scoreboard. Take your points, add the points up. You're going to be fine. I thought that was very smart too. One thing I loved, Spencer Brown's false start penalty on the 1 yard line. I was so happy when he did that.
Yes.
There's a documentary that follows Bill Belichick around called Do Your Job. And it was done in one of the Patriots' early years. And he's mic'd up at practice and he's talking about this exact scenario to a defensive end. And he's like, they're going to try to get you to jump off sides and they're even going to flinch. Think about it. If they get called with false start, they back the ball up this much. If you jump off sides, you just save their drive by getting them out of the end zone. Spencer Brown was so on top of it. And I'm going to give the Bills, Aaron Cromer, Sean McDermott, situational football credit. Anytime any Broncos player even looks like he wants to move, you make the move like it made you move, and you hope the refs go in your favor. Kudos to Spencer Brown. It didn't work out. The Bills backed up like a half of an inch, but that's something smart teams do. Game of inches. The Bills haven't been the sharpest team, most buttoned up in those scenarios. I loved that, Luca. And to me, that's the growth of this team, situational awareness, and I'm going to give Sean McDermott credit for that.
It's the one thing that we ultimately always hang over the head of Sean McDermott. Situational awareness, game management, understanding the game in its entire depth. It's a very complex sport that is American football, the NFL. It's a very, very difficult thing to always be on top of. And little details like that are exactly why the Bill Belichicks of the world are known as the GOATs and the greatest to do it, because they are very understanding to every little detail. And wherever you can find an edge in a game, this is a chance to take an opportunity, because as you said, it's a game of inches, it's a game of yards. And if you have any sort of opportunity to get, take advantage of something, try it, go for it, do it. Whether it's, you know, really offloading and doing crazy things with your offensive line, heavy sets, stuff like that. Or as we're talking about here, naturally just come up with an idea where it's like the risk is so far less than the reward that is getting yourself 5 yards of space. And then from there, being able to kind of kickstart your drive and do whatever it is that you want to do. You buy yourself, we'll call it room for error, but ultimately just the comfort of knowing that you're not pinned up with the back of your end zone right there on you. So I love it. It is a sign of maybe that dark cloud isn't really hanging directly over Sean McDermott. Now, I want to see that kind of moment in a bigger game against the Ravens, against the Chiefs, if they get the opportunity. So it felt like this game wasn't quite to that level, even though it was a playoff game and it was comfortable. You know, it was as comfortable of a playoff game as you possibly could have, realistically, right? And what I will say is I felt comfortable as well. If we want to talk about coaching, I loved a moment in this game where it cuts to Jay Feely on the sideline, and Jay Feely sitting there telling the audience how he talked to Sean Payton and he talked to them to see how they would get an edge. And you mentioned, you know, the Broncos had a bunch of all pros, and one guy that was mentioned was Marvin Mims. You know, he's an all pro returner, and Will Lutz hasn't missed a kick since November. And they really feel like they can get an edge in this game due to special teams. And to the credit of everyone, even though I still don't think the special teams had their greatest day, there were definitely a couple things that I have my gripes with. Overall, you still had enough moments where you didn't let a team that felt like they had an edge on you get an edge in any sort of way where they thought they were better than you. And thankfully, Mac Hollins put a nice little exclamation point on why that was the case and absolutely destroyed their one edge.
Yeah.
Right through him. It's those kinds of things, though, where you see that, and it's like a team thinks they can get you here. Oh, Surtain, we've been hearing in the national media, if you've been listening sometimes, apparently he's the X factor who can get rid of this revolutionary 4x1 offense. Well, didn't really work out when he gets roasted by Curtis Samuel. That whole edge thing you think you have doesn't exist, because our fourth best receiver was able to clear out space due to that exact style of offense and concept. Thank you very much. That's your defensive player of the year? TJ Watt, still better. Anyways, so I got monetary reasons, if anyone's wondering.
Oh yeah, if you're watching on YouTube, money signs.
So I loved that moment in a nutshell. I loved everything about this game when it comes to getting an edge, understanding where maybe you could be lacking or where they have an edge, and absolutely trying to capitalize every step of the way. And yes, I think Sean McDermott absolutely deserves his flowers for this game overall, because it was a very strong performance and should have you feeling better, like I said before, where that gray cloud might not be perfectly centered over his head, Josh. It might be tailing off, and maybe the sun is finally dawning on him on how to manage a game in bigger moments and at the big level, and how to truly understand the little details where maybe you can get yourself out of things and get that edge that you ultimately need to get over the finish line with a win.
I know this is a Bills podcast, and I know that, you know, the Bills won 31-7 and we're all super happy. Can I say something nice about the Broncos? That's Sean Payton fake punt. I'm not even mad at the Bills special teams. What stones on Sean Payton? I mean, when you think about what he asked his punter to do in that scenario, it goes down in the record book as a 15-yard pass, but the 15 yards is the distance from the line of scrimmage to where the play ends. The punter is already like 10 yards back on the snap. And then you're talking about the fact that it's a deep out. And I have to get the punter's name here, Riley Dixon. Now, maybe he's played quarterback and they had no concerns here, but we're talking about a January day in Buffalo where the winds have taken out many a good quarterbacks. Sean Payton's like, hey, Riley Dixon, we're going to call for you to throw a 15-yard out. Like, he threw an actual timing out route to Marvin Mims, and it had to be in a good spot. Now, look, the way that the Bills players are playing on that play, it's not like they were coached poorly. It's what gunners do. They turn their back, they run, and it was a good call by Sean Payton. But Jamarcus Ingram recovered in time, where if that ball is not placed where Marvin Mims is running to, Ingram is going to knock it down. And the stones on Sean Payton to do that, incredible. I will now redact my confidence and my compliment and say, hey, Sean, if you were cool going for it on fourth down with that play, four plays later to turn around and punt, don't really understand that one. Not saying you should run your fake punt unit out there again. They'd probably see it coming, but why not leave your offense on the field? But Luca, I know you enjoy a good stones play by a coach. What'd you think of that move by Payton?
Sean Payton does have a massive pair. That's it's well documented. I don't think anyone even questioned that. Of course, there's the famous Super Bowl onside kick that they even felt the need to highlight following that fake punt. It does. It takes a lot of guts in that moment to make that call. I think it helps when you feel like you really don't, I don't want to say don't have a chance, but you're a long shot, right? You're an 8.5-point dog in the playoffs on the road against what feels like a clearly better team, because let's face it, they are. And you need, as Tony Romo said, as everyone understands it, you need to somehow buy another possession, or, you know, steal a possession, steal something. We just talked about getting an edge. That is a great way, of course, to get an edge in the game. And it was a perfect time to call that. It feels like something too, Josh, I will say, that they clearly highlight that, hey, these gunners do like to flip their hips early. They don't necessarily wait for the punt to actually leave the punter's foot, whatever it is, before they flip. And if that's the case, that's just good coaching. That's getting out coached from the special team side, which is clearly something that we even heard. As I mentioned, they felt like they had an edge in overall, which was special teams. And it felt like early on, Josh, that was the case. That was the only time. Well, I'm not going to get into too crazy, but that was really the only time that it felt like special teams truly did let us down. But even as you said, it took a perfect placement of a ball that ultimately traveled in the air, most likely 30 yards, 25 to 30 yards, if not more, that he absolutely executed perfectly and ultimately could have bought them another score. But even to your credit and to your point, yeah, I don't understand doing that and then just all of a sudden turning around and punting it from an even short. I don't know. But at the end of the day, would it have made a difference for them? Definitely not. I'm going to be quite honest there. But I mean, if you're going to show aggression at that point in time, you should probably just show aggression from there on out. And it just feels like something where you just wanted to almost remind individuals, hey, I do like to make these kinds of calls. We'll be here next year for me to make these kinds of calls, things like that. And they might be in that kind of position next year. I mean, the Broncos don't exactly look like they're trending downwards when you have a Bo Nix, who's a rookie quarterback, leading the charge for you. It's a little bit of a tip of the cap. I guess we can give Sean Payton a little bit of credit for showing the couple pair that lay before him.
The Broncos have some work to do this offseason. I said before this game started, they remind me of the 2019 Bills, a fun young quarterback, but he has a ways to go. He's a gamer. They need weapons upgraded. I thought Bo Nix had multiple times today where his weapons could have made good catches for him. The ball was placed where it could have been caught. Maybe not necessarily a precise pass, but rookie quarterback, first playoff game on the road against the Buffalo Bills. You'd like to see Cortland Sutton, Vele. I guess I'll give Troy Franklin a break because he's also a rookie, but some of these catches that were dropped, it's like, make a play for your guy. But they'll be back. You know, we'll see what happens this offseason. They're going to be an interesting team to watch. Luca, let's put the Broncos to bed here as we are going to do our favorite weekly segment, game balls and game checks. So game ball is our game MVP. Who gets your game ball for the Bills' victory over the Broncos today?
So you gave a little hint earlier on potentially who I could give my game ball to. And to your credit, it was definitely an individual that could absolutely receive a game ball. And it's not Josh Allen. You had mentioned James Cook. I'm not going to start rattling off names, but those are not the individuals I'm going to give my game ball to. I think there's one individual that he may have not truly shown up too much on the stat sheet, although there was a small stretch where it really felt like they were truly trying to get him into the end zone and make sure he showed up on the scoreboard. And that was probably because of the effort that he had put in totality. And I keep using these broad terms because he did a lot more than just simple, you know, yardage stats, which would be his traditional means to getting in the box score. He is on the thumbnail of this episode. If you watch on YouTube, Mac Hollins gets my game ball. And simply put, he, to me, when he hits Marvin Mims as a gunner and does his best Steve Tasker impersonation, whatever, is when he does that, that was the moment where I was like, this game's over. Because if you have that kind of mentality, and he steps over him, he gives his whole Allen Iverson impersonation the first time in this game, and somehow even gets Mims all pissed off to the point where he decides to throw the ball away from Reed Ferguson and take a personal foul call. That was when I was like, yes, this team's mentality is just different. And then from there, you see Mac Hollins hit his beautiful, it feels like the only route in his route tree, Josh, the old skinny post from the inside slot. It just, he's money at it. He does that on Patrick Surtain and then proceeds to step over him as well. And then I will say, I'm not a lip reader, but it did feel like the ref even said something to Mac Hollins when he's just saying, nah, that I don't want to repeat on this, but it felt like, I don't think a ref really needs to say that to Mac Hollins. But anyways, he flags him for that and then also was called for an illegal motion by the same exact official that I find suspect that maybe that official is not Mac Hollins' biggest fan. But I might be one of the many that find him awesome where you need to try to get him on a new Vetman deal or whatever it'll take that isn't going to break the bank to get him back, because this guy is vibes on vibes on vibes. He deserves all the credit in the world for just being an absolute teamer. And today he highlighted himself in such a way that was so unique and awesome that I don't know if I could respect myself if I didn't give Mac Hollins the game ball. So yeah, Mac Hollins gets my game ball.
Yeah. I'm not a blame the refs guy. You're not a blame the refs guy. There was about a 3 or 4 play stretch though, late in this game, when the hometown fans were all, yeah, saying, refs, you suck. You've heard this in every sport, in every stadium, but these refs were taking it personally, and they were like, we'll show you how bad we suck. You want us to keep calling plays against your team? It felt like the refs were taking that personally. I like the Mac Hollins call. I am going to go with James Cook. Let me reread his line here. 23 carries, 120 yards, 5.2 yards per carry. Just the way the Bills can run the ball this year at will on good defenses is just such a weapon that they haven't had. I have not, Luca, taken a look ahead too much to next weekend's forecast. We don't even know, I don't believe, when that game's going to be, although everything in my brain tells me it'll have to be Sunday night, you would think. I mean, when you start factoring in things like the Texans played on Saturday, the Chiefs have been off, why would they put that game on Sunday? See, it's going to be a night game one way or the other. And so you put it on Sunday, and then you don't have the advantage of Ravens having full week rest, Bills having one less day. It's the playoffs. There's always going to be a little bit of a discrepancy, but that one has Sunday night, 6 p.m. Nance Romo written all over it to me to wrap up your football weekend.
Yeah, it does feel too where we've been seeing a trend now, which makes a total, logically makes a ton of sense. One seeds play on Saturday and then the others play on Sunday. Therefore, the one seeds don't need another day of rest. And then on top of it all, they even get that little bonus day if they were to proceed to get into the conference championships. And then also the teams that did have to play in the wild card weekend, most likely being the two hosting whoever, then has that next day to kind of rest up. I feel like that's why you see your two seeds playing on Sunday, because most likely they're just going to be playing on Sunday the following week, and they're, you know, so on and so forth. So it does feel like it's almost because ever since they expanded to the 7-team, playoffs, that it almost stacks the schedule a lot more predictable. It makes a lot more sense. So yeah, this does feel like we're going to be getting Nance and Romo. I do keep thinking though, just in the sake of, you know, history repeating itself, the last time we had Bills or Ravens at Bills in the playoffs, it did turn out to be the Saturday night game on NBC. And, you know, could we see that? I does feel like NBC sure loves them, the Ravens. But, I don't know. Overall, it does feel like we'll be getting Nance and Romo once again on Sunday. So
the counter to that, though, was you had Breeze and Brady in the money spot.
Right. So, no, yeah. It's one of those ones where, like, look, does it really truly matter where it is? No. I also will say this. I have a little bit of a personal affinity to that Saturday night divisional spot mm-hmm. because the Saturday night divisional spot to me has been extra special. The only two games where I had a little bit more of a rooting interest, Josh, there's two in this. There is the Bills Ravens game that I already referred to, Taron Johnson pick six. The other, can you even remotely guess what that other one is?
Let me guess. Eeny, meeny, miny, Cardinals, Panthers.
Yeah. Cardinals,
Panthers. I have only been doing this show with you now for 2 years, Luca.
Cardinals, Panthers on Saturday night when I had to listen to Terry, it was on Fox at the time, Terry Bradshaw say, Cardinals have no shot going into Carolina and doing anything. And then we get to see yet another great Larry Fitzgerald performance. And I would remember being in the basement of my childhood home, absolutely going ape shit during that entire game because that was extra special to me. I learned
something today, by the way. We're talking about schedules. You were quick to point out that the Monday night game has always been a 4-5 matchup, and it's been the NFC. I learned the why. Let me hold off this coffee. The why is before the games kick off tomorrow, they want to be able to schedule next week's games. Yeah. So the only way you can do that with certainty where the winner of the last game is automatically going somewhere is 4 and 5 are going to the same place. Everything else has to happen around 4 and 5 because the NFL reseeds. So say tonight the Buccaneers beat the Commanders. The Buccaneers being the 3 seed will automatically go to Philly. Winner of Vikings Rams will go to the Lions no matter what. So they can say Lions versus whoever, put the schedule out there. That's why they do it. I thought that I never thought about it, but it makes sense.
Yes.
other shout outs real quick. Khalil Shakir. Not super easy job here returning punts in, somewhat windy stadium. January, first time this year he's had to return punts. He actually had an explosive return, handled the ball well today. And he also offensively had 6 for 61, a couple nice catches and runs. Ty Johnson, I mean, has this guy ever dropped the ball? Holy cow. What a nice backup running back. And he, you know, I compared him to James White a few weeks back. And honestly, get ready for this one, Luca. I feel like I may have undersold him because James White's production was all in the passing game. And it's like Ty Johnson's a damn good running back.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that he's James White in the passing game, but Ty Johnson went 9 for 44 today for 4.9. And it's worth noting that Ray Davis left with a terrible looking concussion.
Yeah.
And it could end up being James Cook and Ty Johnson carrying the load going forward in the playoffs. I would assume Frank Gore Jr. could be elevated for that, but that's another one I wanted to mention. And then defensively, did I have anybody I wanted to think about? Rough day for Benford. Rousseau was really strong on the edges again, containing the run. None of the defensive tackles. I think that's it. I think I'm good. Game checks, Luca. With the good, there's got to be some bad. Not a whole lot of bad in this game, but you and I find a way to always find it every week. Oh, Tyler Bass made all of his kicks. Good for him. bad. Who gets your game check today for the Bills?
So the way the game went, I'd honestly be like, this could be the classic, like, bailout, take Sam Martin. Oh, he didn't really have to do much today. But I will say, you even mentioned it. It's not necessarily a coaching issue or anything like that. But someone that at least has shown that they're serviceable and good at their job and everything like that may have had a tougher than usual day. And I'm going to go with Jamarcus Ingram. And that's simply because the biggest highlight that he had today was being caught on by a receiver that was throwing a pass from a punter. Not the strongest game for Jamarcus Ingram. Not that we needed him to have a strong game. Not that he was really called upon to do a lot in a game where the Bills had dominated. It's hard to find those kinds of moments to really key on. And because of that, key on, man, that kind of sounds funny now when you say it like that. But Jamarcus Ingram ultimately for me feels like just a minor, hey, game check award, not your best day, but it's not something where I'm even remotely concerned about him moving forward. It's just sometimes you have one of those days where you get got and there's nothing really more that you could do except for kind of shake your head and move on.
Yeah, I agree. And it's tough. We're kind of splitting hairs here trying to figure out a game check. I'm going to go. I just had it. And did I? Taylor Rapp. And it's not that I thought Taylor Rapp played poorly. I felt like there were a couple of instances out there where if Bo Nix throws a better ball, we really would have felt the misstep by Rapp. And there was even a play late in the second quarter, I believe, where it looked like they could have gotten an explosive touchdown. And Rapp is charging in, leading a shoulder. And I'm thinking to myself, if he catches this ball and your shoulder doesn't knock him to the ground, you're going to be on a low light reel for the rest of the week. And if the Bills lose this game, holy cow, good luck, Taylor Rapp. So yeah, I, you know, the safety play on this team, Luca, they've survived. You know, you lose Hyde and Poyer, even at the state they were at last year. It's hard to replace. Taylor Rapp, I think, has had a mostly decent season. But, you know, I'm fully expecting by next year Cole Bishop to be one of the starters. And I would guess probably Taylor Rapp is back, but I would expect that room to look a little bit different. Maybe another prospect or two in there to kind of like put into the pipeline, because the safety play this year has not been the classic safety play we've been used to in the McDermott defense, to put it lightly. All right, Luca, we know what's next. The main event, if you will. And that's saying something, because there still is a potential Bills versus Chiefs matchup. And this game that they call the Super Bowl could be ahead of the Bills. But this one feels like if life were a movie, this is a showdown that needs to happen. The Josh Allen versus Lamar Jackson dialogue all year has been a little bit exhausting,
a little bit.
Primarily, I think, because the loudest voices on each side are usually the people that are least knowledgeable or go to the grossest places on both sides. And you know, let me just say this real quick. Twitter stinks. And I do a lot of our stuff on Twitter, so I have to live in that world. If you're on Twitter and you live on Bill's Twitter, your interaction with Ravens fans is going to be with the gross ones, because the gross ones are the ones that infiltrate Bill's Twitter. The normal ones, the normal people that just want to get on Twitter and get information about their team and interact with fans and kind of like learn what's going on, they don't go to Bill's Twitter to call you an idiot. They just kind of stay in their lane, get on Twitter and get off Twitter. And that's why Ravens fans, the exact same thing is for Bills fans. Their interaction with Bills fans is the gross ones on our side. And that's why everybody thinks that everybody else's fan base is terrible, because we only interact with the losers who come over to our side and try to troll. And I wish that we could all just find a way to get rid of those people, but I think we all just have to kind of get to a point where trying to win an argument on Twitter is pointless and is worth nothing, and just, you know, get there for information and get out as fast as you can. But it's really dumbed down the MVP conversation. You know, calling Josh Allen a quarterback sneak merchant, calling Lamar Jackson like the second best running back on his team, you know, stupid stuff like that. Both these players are excellent, but Luca, it's the ultimate showdown. It's two players that have had tremendous careers. Really, both of them right now have the same dark cloud over their head of like, you've been fantastic, but you haven't gotten past the Mahomes thing. You haven't gotten the Super Bowl trophy. And now they do battle in their best year. And, you know, it's a game that the script is perfect for. And I feel like in my history of watching sports, when a script sets up this perfectly, the game almost always disappoints. Like, it's like a blowout one way or the other. That's why 13 seconds is just like so epic to so many people that aren't Bills fans, because that's like one of the few games that came through for you. But what a perfect script, what a perfect game, and what a perfect night that game will be.
I think it would be extremely difficult for this matchup not to live up to the expectations. We've mentioned all of these things where there are a few quarterbacks in this league that are impossible to defend. There is no scheme that can out-scheme these quarterbacks. Eventually, they will find a way because they are just that good. And two of those guys are going to be face-to-face tomorrow. Or tomorrow, geez, wow, that'd be crazy if it was tomorrow. Next week, in the next game, that are also coincidentally up for the MVP award. And it's one where I don't know if it's an appropriate time to say it, but I think it is. Josh, we were talking about it a little bit before we started recording, and I think you said it so well. It's one where you can easily see a path that coming out of that game, you just go, hat on a hat, we came up short, unfortunately, and I can live with it. That's how good Lamar Jackson is. That's how good the Ravens are. But then again, we still love our side. We still like our team. And there's easily a way that we can see ourselves winning and coming out on top and therefore moving forward as well. It is a great matchup. It's going to be a great game. And I find it very, very difficult to see an outcome where Ravens coming to Orchard Park to play the Bills in the divisional round isn't going to just work out to be I'm not saying an all-time classic. It's not going to be the 13 seconds game, but it will still be a very good display of football. And it's just solely because primarily those two guys that are at the top of their game and just do what they do, which both of those guys do it in a different fashion at the best way possible. It's if you were it's to simply put it, like I laugh all the time when people talk about how Lamar Jackson is the runaway, pun intended, best dual threat quarterback in this league. And I just go, Josh Allen absolutely has a seat at that table. But then therefore, when it comes to being one of, if not the best quarterback in this league, or let's just say the next best behind Patrick Mahomes, if you want to, of course, include accolades and everything that you should, in all due respect, give them. I know Lamar has two MVPs, Josh Allen has none, but there's a reason that they're so neck and neck. It's because they are that close to each other when it comes to who is truly better or not. And I think you've said it in the past. Why does it ultimately matter? Let's just enjoy who we each have. I feel like we have this conversation more when it comes to like Allen versus Mahomes, but that same conversation doesn't come up with Lamar. And I feel like it's warranted, right? These are two absolutely special, most likely Hall of Fame quarterbacks that are just matching up it with the most at stake. At least it feels like it can be when it comes to meeting up in the divisional round. And the only reason, Josh, these two are forced to meet up in the divisional round is because, oh, by the way, that Mahomes guy we're talking about, he somehow seems to always get the first seed. And that's just the way the reality is, right? So it's one of those things where I don't see a world truly where it won't live up to hype. This feels hype proof, I guess we'll put it. Is just, it will be a great game of football thanks to these two guys. And I know for a fact that it will be almost impossible not to appreciate this. But when the kickoff comes, Josh, I'm not going to say I'm going to be a Lamar hater, but I will be looking forward to hopefully him screwing up a few times, hopefully that will ultimately lead to Bill's success. But I also share a hat with you when it comes to, it's not something where I'd feel massive disappointment actual game aside for however it actually breaks down, where the Ravens just somehow, you know, whether they squeak it out, they win by seven, whatever the case is, that I would be ultimately that disappointed because the Ravens are a very good team. They have a very good running back, but it always will and always will continue. It always is and always will run through Lamar Jackson because he is that special and that's who you want always having the ball, of course.
It's going to be fun. There's going to be a segment of Bills fans that are incredibly nervous because, well, it's the playoffs, but week four, the Bills lost 35-10. I'm going to say two things about that game, and we'll get into it much more on our preview show later this week. One, the Bills played that game without Matt Milano, without Terrell Bernard, and without Taron Johnson. Now, look, Khalil Shakir left that game early, didn't come back, and Amari Cooper was not a Bill yet. So we can talk about that, but let's just focus on defense. You're talking about your two starting linebackers and your nickelback and your base defense. So essentially, as Luca likes to call Taron Johnson, your third linebacker, your three linebackers against Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson. Tough world to live in. And that was early season Dorian Williams, not what we saw him develop into. So I do think that there's reason to believe that the Bills will have more success defensively. The other thing I will say about that game, 35-10 is an ugly final score. At one point, it was 21-3, and the Bills drive down in the second half and get a touchdown. And then they force a three and out, and they get the ball back, and they drive down to midfield. They're down 21-10, and the worst flea flicker in the history of flea flickers gets called. Josh Allen is sacked, fumbled, and the game is essentially over at that point. I don't know that the Bills would have won that game if that play wasn't called, but at that point, 21-10, ball at the midfield, Bills had momentum. I would have loved to see it play out without that play call. Just a couple of things to keep in your back pocket. Plus, that game was at Baltimore. Lucas touched on before just how amazing John Harbaugh has been in his career at home in Baltimore on primetime spots. There was a lot working against the Bills in that spot. The Ravens were 1-2. They were desperate. The Bills were 3-0 coming off of a Monday night victory. Again, short rest against Jacksonville. So a lot of things went into that. These two teams are both vastly different. One other thing to keep in mind this week, the Ravens' best pass receiver, Zay Flowers, may not be playing in that game. In fact, depending on who you listen to on Twitter, it sounds like the betting odds are more so that he won't play than he will. And if he does play, he's not going to be 100%. And that's massive. But I'm looking forward, Luca, to diving into this game, talking more about it as the week goes on. Have you seen the opening line for this game yet?
I saw the one that was like way early projected line. I don't know if it shifted due to results. So no, the answer is I have not.
I have not looked it up, but I will give credit to Matt Perino of New York Upstate. He posted this about 2 hours ago, and he obviously is a professional, so I'll take his word for it. You want to guess?
I'm going to go ahead and guess that the result from Saturday night, as well as the one that we just experienced, did not move that line whatsoever, because it feels like both games pretty much expected, pretty much went exactly as expected. So therefore, I would say Bills are -1.5 at home against the Ravens.
Very, very close. Bills -1. You're right. Both teams held serve. And I will say, like, both teams avoided major injury, although there's probably at least a conversation this week about Lamar Jackson's midsection. That did not look like nothing. So we'll see what comes of that. I mean, obviously Lamar Jackson's going to play, but you know, we'll see. We'll see what comes of that. But fun week ahead, Luca. As Bill Parcells once said, this is why you lift all them weights. Hey, draft podcasts are fun. Preseason and training camp podcasts are fun. You know, ramping up for the regular season, doing a regular season podcast when we're going against the 0-5 Jacksonville Jaguars. Sure. This is what we do it for. These moments right here. Hopefully a moment that leads to a bigger moment the next week and then the biggest moment possible the week after. I can't wait to get into it. My one advice to all of you who are going to have trouble sleeping just like me this week, just remember, it's super important to us. We love this team. We all want to see this team win one before we die. Unfortunately, unless you're in attendance, then you have at least a little bit of impact. Nothing we do this week will impact the game. So don't sacrifice sleep. Don't screw yourself over at work by not getting stuff done because you're watching YouTube highlights. You know, live your life. The game will happen. Trust the coach. Trust the process, Luca. Trust the process. Oh, trust the people that are paid to get this done. And if you're one of the lucky that get to go to the game on Saturday or Sunday, again, I'm going to refresh Twitter. I don't think it's out yet. I think it'll come out after the game tonight.
I think it either comes out after tonight or even tomorrow.
If you're one of the ones that are lucky to be in there, I want you to be as loud as you have ever been in your entire life. Luca, any final thoughts?
I'm just going to keep listening to what I would preach, and it's going to be simply everything you just said. But then when it even comes to game time, we'll talk about it more potentially later this week. Wink, wink. But I'm going to practice what I preach. I'm not going to overreact early in a game. The game is 60 minutes. I'm going to listen to Rasul Douglas and just say, hey, there's a lot of ball left. It's okay. So if Derrick Henry were to bust another massive one right down the middle of our defense and start it out strong once again, I'm just going to take a deep breath, be pretty pissed off, but then move on and understand that there's still plenty of game to be played. And as you even said, this team is different than the one that went to Baltimore earlier in the season. Baltimore is a different team as well, for better, for the most part, than they were then. This is a different matchup now than it was then. History doesn't just magically repeat itself. And it does also feel like, Josh, where you see that trend that, although it's one that if we were to get through this game, we would not want to experience, where when you get the result in the regular season, you seem to have the result flip in the postseason. Let's, you know, take it for what it is, 1 week at a time, right?
One Go week Texans. At a time.
1 week at a time. But overall, as you beautifully said, take each day for what it is. Do not lose sleep over it. Sleep is very important. And the weekend will come soon enough. We'll be enjoying this Bills game. And let's just be thankful that the Bills were able to secure that 2 seed to make sure it was in Buffalo.
Let's also be thankful that there's going to be a game in the NFL. There's going to be 4. But there's a premier game this week between arguably the 2 best quarterbacks in the sport this year. Mahomes is still 1 overall. And one of those guys is the Bills quarterback. This is our life. If you survived the 17-year drought, the fact that we are here, going to have a week to ramp up for this game, it's incredible. And just enjoy the ride. But as part of the ride will be Luca and I back later this week to preview Bills Ravens round two. The Bills are on to the second round, Luca. That makes it 2020, 21, 22, 23, 24. 5 years in a row, they've made it to the second round. The only other team in the NFL that can claim that is those nasty, nasty Chiefs. Although they cheat, a lot of times they get a bye to the second round. So maybe we shouldn't give them full credit for that, those jerks. For Luca, I am Josh McCarty. We will talk to you next time on Bills Chat.